Rolling. What's happening, y'all? Andy and Zach, and we have a special guest on the podcast today. We've got on Mr. Willis Graves, who is a local PT and Highland Games athlete here in Nashville. Sir, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Isn't he so good at those introductions?
He is very good. He's done it a time or two.
He's done it, every single episode, but only 77 episodes.
Thank you. I will take my compliments where I can get them.
Okay.
So if that means at the top of the show, that's where I'll take it.
And you look great today for being 24.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, I remember when I was 24 once upon a time.
So what, are you 31 now?
No.
I'm 34. Well, how old am I? I'm 34, so you're 33.
That is also incorrect.
34?
That's right.
What? I thought I was for some reason, I thought I was a little older than that.
Just because you're so much wiser than me doesn't mean that you're that much older than me.
Clearly, my brain's not working today at all.
Well, that's quite all right. Well, yes. Well, Andy let the cat out of the bag. Today is 7-Eleven Free Slurpee Day, also the day of my birth that we celebrate every year in the sweltering heat.
Mm. I was going to say, I would have gotten you a Slurpee, but it would have not made it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Next time.
Just be a drink by the time we got here.
The P minus the slurp.
Yeah.
So, man. So it's been a great day of training folks. You know, it is a Monday. Folks know that we typically record on Mondays. Busy day working with clients as we probably all have all day today. No Mondays off. But I did have quite a fun weekend coming up. So it's not all work and no play. But enough about me. Let's talk about our special guest, Mr. Willis Graves. You are someone who's made a splash, and we'll maybe get into your professional life here in a little bit. But being a little bit selfish, what I am most interested in is your experience as a Highland Games athlete.
Yeah.
And as someone who kind of found fitness and training and strength sports later on after being like burnt out by being not good at traditional ball sports, stuff like powerlifting, Spartan race, and obviously strongman and Highland Games has always been very, very fascinating to me and has very much interested me and has informed a lot of my training. So I'm curious, maybe you can actually just kind of set the table and tell our listeners what exactly Highland Games is.
It's one of my favorite questions. So Highland Games is, I would say, out of all kind of like the strength sports you mentioned, I would say it's probably the closest cousin to strongman, just because of kind of like the concept of like strange implements. But as far as like what a traditional Highland Games look like, I'm not as great on the history as I should be. But if I understand correctly, so if you look at Highland Games, kind of the whole umbrella, if you were to look at what it is overseas, like in Scotland, kind of where it originated, I believe the Highland Games encompasses what they refer to over there as heavy athletics and light athletics. Kind of being like pretty much like an old school track meet. So the heavy athletics would be pretty much what we compete in over here. It's all, there's 9 events and they are all throwing events. So you're throwing some sort of implement, either for distance or for height. And then they have what are, I believe, are referred to as the light athletics. Again, I could be wrong on this, but light athletics would be kind of like your track events at a track meet. So they have like foot races. I believe that some they have even have like wrestling, stuff like that. So here in the States, like what you hear referred to as Highland Games is pretty much just the heavy athletics. So it's 9 different throwing events over the course of usually 1, but sometimes 2 days, just depending on how the game splits it up. A lot of times like bigger games will split it up into 2 days, but typically just done in 1 day.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Yeah, I, on my dad's side, I am of Scottish descent. So I've only ever been to one Highland Games, and it was the one here at the Hermitage, I believe, several years ago.
Yeah, probably at Middle Tennessee, like Celtic Festival or something.
Yeah, I think the exact name. Yeah. But yeah, you know, the Hendersons had their own tent.
Okay.
You know, yeah. So you go up there, you say, hey, I'm Zach Henderson. They say, well, this glass of scotch is for you.
Yeah.
And I had a grand old time,
yeah,
as you can imagine. But yeah, so the only time, obviously, that I've only, so I've only ever seen Highland Games in person that one time. That was about 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah, man, and it was wild. It was obviously super cool to see. You've got, obviously, like you mentioned, like throwing for distance, and then you've got throwing for height. So you've all manner of things tossed over the head,
right?
Which seems a little scary, you know. And then, of course, everybody's favorite, the caber.
Yeah.
So the caber is the big telephone pole thing.
Yeah.
And so that is a tossing event because the goal is to toss it end over end. Is that my understanding?
Yeah. So caber is the only one that's like not, the scoring's not as straightforward, takes a little bit more explaining, but basically somebody will stand it up to you, so it's vertical, and then from there you're on your own to pick it from the ground into your hands and then run with it. And the goal is to, imagine if you're standing on a clock face and you're running straight ahead towards 12 o'clock, the goal is to, a perfect score would be to flip it straight end over end at 12, and then you lose points as you move out to 11 and 1, 10 and 2, and then anything, I guess, behind 9 and 3 is not a turn. Better score as you move towards 12 o'clock.
Wow.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I've seen it done, but I didn't realize that was the goal, was like a linear toss, basically.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
How heavy is it?
They vary. They can be anywhere from, like, I would say across, like, skill levels from, like, pretty novice to, like, pro. Men's cabers are going to be anywhere from, like, 75 on the lower end to, like, a really big, like, challenge pro caber could be anywhere, like, around 150 pounds.
Holy shit.
Woo!
And then anywhere from, gosh, it depends, anywhere from, like, 16 to 20 feet long.
Oh, wow. Now, you mentioned, like, novice to advanced or professional. Do they, when you compete in the games, do they delineate you based on experience and weight class, or just weight class, or how do you get matched up with your competitors?
A little bit of both. As far as, like, weight classes, I guess you could say there's two. Technically, really, the only one, so the one I compete in is the lower weight class. It's called the lightweight class, and that's basically 200 pounds, well, under 200 pounds.
Okay.
Most games will do, you weigh in the day of. Some games are getting to where they'll let you weigh in the day before. But under 200 pounds, and then everybody above that is your open class. Usually in the lightweight class, there's not going to be as many athletes, so they won't base it off of skill. So I could go to games and throw with, throw in a class with 10 guys and have everybody in there has done several games before, or I could go in there and five of those 10 guys, it's their first games. But a lot of times in the classes above, or the open class, there's typically going to be more athletes, so they will split it up by skill level. So some games will purely just have a novice class and then an open class, or some games will split it up even more. You'll have like a novice, which is just like pure first timers. You can have a B class, which is kind of the next step up, and then your A class, which is in other places pretty much like your typical open class.
Okay.
Yeah.
Plus or minus 200. Oh.
Yeah. So it's either under 200 or it could be.
I'm gonna start gaining weight again.
210 or 350. It just, woo, there's a lot of wiggle room in there.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's wild. So the obvious question is, how did you get into Highland Games yourself?
Yeah, so I played sports growing up in high school. I played football and soccer in high school and, like, did the whole weight room training. thing, but not to really maybe, there wasn't as much guidance and structure there looking back as there could have been. So like I was in the weight room, but didn't really like find a passion for it or like strive to push myself there until after I graduated high school. So summer, right after I graduated high school was kind of when I started consistently training in the weight room. Did kind of like the bro lifting thing for a couple years, like going to college, just trying to be, trying to get jacked.
I'm still trying.
I know. It's still a journey.
Working on it, man.
Yeah. So I probably have, since high school, I'm probably about 40 or 50 pounds heavier. So I was kind of the skinny fat guy when I graduated high school. So kind of just did like the bro lifting thing for a couple years and then transitioned over to kind of training more for strength and got into powerlifting and did that for a few years, kind of finishing up undergrad. And then after I graduated undergrad, was still training for powerlifting and was living in Memphis at the time and training with a crew out there. You're one of the Blatting brothers that mm-hmm. you're familiar with. Garrett was... he was kind of doing training for powerlifting, but also was doing Highland Games and wasn't really sure what it was. Like kind of, I would hear about it and didn't really like look too much into it. I knew he was doing this like kind of weird sport thing on the side and like kind of found out more about it and thought it looked like fun. I always thought like shot put and discus and stuff like that looked like fun in high school, but didn't ever really give it a shot because I didn't think I'd be very good at it. So in hindsight, I wish I could go back and talk to high school Willis and tell him to just do it. But yeah, so I think it was end of 2017, was still training for powerlifting and kind of just went out with Garrett one day when he went out to practice and just kind of tried a couple of the events, had a blast doing it. And he seemed just kind of confident that I could get decent at it with some practice. So kind of did the thing where I trained for powerlifting, like was still training for powerlifting meets, but would just kind of go off and throw with Garrett every now and then. And then did that probably like all the way through 2018, which I did my first games in my first Highland Games, April 2018. And then I think kind of just did the hybrid thing for that year. And then going into 2019, decided I wanted to switch all my like training efforts over towards training for the Highland Games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I can assume that's probably how a lot of people get into it. You're already into powerlifting, maybe CrossFit, and a friend of a friend, an acquaintance, somebody who already knows the ropes, shows you a thing or two,
yeah.
and away you go. Yeah. So what, I guess I would assume that Highland Games training, like outside of like the weight room, I mean, I'm sure like doing all your major lifts is helpful, but a lot of it obviously has to come down to skill. So are we thinking you go out to a field and you just toss various implements? What are the things you actually throw? And maybe you can delve a little bit deeper into the techniques of what some of the events and throws entail.
Yeah, so in the Highland Games, there will be 9 events. One of them is an extra event that we do here that they don't do in Scotland. But 9 events, I'll just kind of go through them in what we call traditional order. So you have 2 stone throw events. One is a heavy stone, typically somewhere around like 22 pounds, but it can vary. And if you're familiar with shot put at all, the second event is called the open stone. It's basically just the precursor to shot put. You can use an approach, you can spin, glide, use any of like the same techniques they do with shot put today, but you're just doing a stone. And typically it weighs the same as what a shot put weighs today, which is 16 pounds. So the open stone is that, and then the event before it is the Braemar stone, which is that heavier stone I was talking about. And for that one, you do not get to do an approach. You just have to do what's called a standing throw. Mm. So you can't like spin or glide or shuffle or anything. You just have to basically get ready, stand, and throw it. Following that, we have 2 weight for distance events. So we have a heavy and a light version of those. In the open class, your heavy weight for distance is going to be 56 pounds, and the light weight for distance is going to be half of that. So it's going to be 28 pounds. pretty much all together. It's about a foot and a half long. You have a little like ring handle, maybe just a couple inches of chain, and then kind of a block weight on the end. You have to hold that in one hand and spin around and throw it for distance. After those, you have two hammer events, which is basically all together, it's 50 inches long, I think is regulation. So pretty much like just a 4 foot long PVC pipe is usually what is used. And then there will be just a little like lead ball weight on the end. So heavy and a light version of that, which are gonna be 22 and 16 pounds. That is kind of the precursor to the wire hammer or the Olympic hammer, which is kind of similar setup, but it's on a wire instead of more like a stick. And that's the one where they will spin around and their feet, a lot of more like foot technique. They spin around probably 3 to 4 times and throw it into the field for distance. With the Scottish hammer, your feet have to stay planted and you basically are facing away from the field where you're throwing, and you wind it around yourself and throw it pretty much over either your right or left shoulder, depending on your hand dominance. So those are the hammers, and you have the caber toss, which we discussed, which is basically the log flip for accuracy, I guess you could say. The sheaf toss is the extra one. A lot of people think it's sheep toss. It's sheaf with an F toss. We're not tossing any live animals. So sheaf toss is the one we do here that they do not do in Scotland usually. And you use a pitchfork and stab it into a, usually a 16 pound bag is standard weight. But gosh, I don't know cubic feet wise, but Not a huge bag, but you stab a pitchfork into this bag, this burlap sack filled with twine, and use the pitchfork to throw the bag as high as you can over a bar. So it's a raising bar each time. And then the last event is the weight over bar, where they take the same heavy weight for distance you used earlier in the day, take the chain off, basically put the ring handle right on the weight, and you throw it over a bar for height.
Wow. Cool, yeah, so you have essentially three or four pairs, light and heavy. Mm-hmm. You got your stone, you've got your, what's it called with the chain?
Weights.
You just call it the weights.
Yeah, weight for distance.
Weight for distance. So you got your stone, weight for distance, then the actual hammer, which would it be inappropriate to compare that to like a mace?
No. Pretty much.
Mace-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So you have two weights for each of those. Then you have your sheaf. Then you have your weight over. And then you have your caber. Right on.
Yeah.
A lot of tossing.
A lot. A lot of throwing.
A lot of throwing.
Yeah.
So in the weight room, we're typically not throwing anything around.
No. Have you seen these ceiling heights?
At least I wouldn't fly in this gym.
There is a viral video of a guy that has gone around. He was practicing he's doing some drills indoors with a kettlebell and let it fly. And there were lights that fell from the ceiling. So that got passed around on social media a good bit.
But, was that guy you?
It was not. It was not me.
Well, I'm actually glad that never came across my radar. Was it me?
I mean, you have been known to fling some kettlebells around.
I have.
Or was it Gavin?
Yeah, but Gavin does all that on purpose.
That's true. And he's actually really fluid with it. So.
Yeah. I think a good podcast guest maybe here soon. So we actually have a friend who owns a gym here in town who is a kettlebell juggler.
Okay.
Yeah. So he flings kettlebells, but he makes it look good.
Yeah.
In addition to all sorts of other wacky feats of strength and athleticism, he's probably another good guy who might take to Highland Games.
Yeah.
I bet he's huge too. He would be in the over 200 class.
Easy. Probably. He'd probably cut to 199 if that is a thing that Highland Games compared us to.
Some guys cut down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a good question. I'm guessing it would be beneficial to train at a heavier weight and try to diet down, but I've never competed. I did wrestle. That's the only reason I would kind of make that comparison. But I would imagine that would be advantageous.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of guys that that just are built. They kind of live around like 215, 220. maybe a little bit over that, and they'll kind of diet down and cut down for certain competitions. I really, if I get over 200, it's really not much. Just my body kind of likes to live around 200 to 205. So if I am over, usually just means cleaning up my diet, being really strict with my diet for a couple weeks, and then maybe I have to manipulate carbs just a little bit the week of, but usually don't have to do anything too drastic.
Mm-hmm. Are you allowed to, after you make your official weigh-in, can you go smash bagels and honey and stuff?
100%.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like wrestling.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, cool, man. So give us a scoop on what some of your accomplishments have been in Highland Games here in the past handful of years.
So my first couple years, I just kind of did... I did the novice class my first games, then did a couple games where I moved up to like amateur B, and then had several games my first season where I had like an open class. Some games will just do that versus like splitting it up. So threw with a bunch of different skill levels, and then kind of learned a little bit more about the lightweight class, and thought I could be kind of competitive there. So been doing the lightweight class for the majority of my Highland Games career now. Accomplishment wise, 2021, managed to win a national championship, so that was pretty cool.
Holy shit, nicely done.
Thank you. And then barely missed out on a second place this year back at the beginning of June, so got third this year at nationals.
Holy hell. Yeah.
Sweet.
At the national level.
At the nationals.
One of my questions was going to be sort of a two-parter. Is there regional qualifiers? Is there a certain area of the United States where like Highland Games are really popular? Or does every state kind of host it? Like, what is the competitive, I don't want to use the word market, but I'm going to use the word market. What does a competitive market for the Highland Games look like?
Yeah, I would say it definitely, like, you have like regions that are kind of like have more pockets of games. You could probably find a games just in about every state, but I definitely think like you've got several kind of in the pocket of like California, Nevada, Arizona. Then you kind of have a little bit of a gap, comes over to like Texas, Oklahoma has a pretty good concentration of games, and then kind of move over into like the Southeast, kind of Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia, the Carolinas, is a pretty good, like the Southeast region has a pretty good collection of games, some really like prominent games around that area, and then also kind of moving up into like, I guess just the Northeast is kind of another little pocket. So you have games all over, but you definitely have like regions, mm-hmm. That are a little bit more heavily populated with games. As far as like qualifiers and stuff, I definitely say it's becoming more popular as people are like trying to grow the sport and make it a little bit more legitimate. I'd say that's probably more common, definitely more common in like the amateur class. The lightweight classes is still kind of a growing class. We have some like really good athletes in that class. But as a whole, I think we kind of lack as big of a base of guys in that class. So lightweight, not as much, but definitely like there's more opportunities for like regional qualifiers and like, I'm using air quotes when I say championships, because there's not the thing about Highland Games is there's not like a governing body, so there's really a lot of like gray area as to like, I mean, you could have three or four like different national championships run by different people, so like what's truly the national championship? I know like the pro, and that's a whole nother thing, like pro versus amateur, mm-hmm. with no governing body, there's really no like set qualification as to how to go pro. Like I could sit here right now and say like I'm gonna make my pro debut, but you need to throw pro numbers or you're not gonna get invites. And then a lot of it comes down to politics. Need to kind of put in your time as an amateur, like going around and meeting athletic directors and stuff like that, kind of build those relationships. But yeah, there's really no like, you have to do X, Y, and Z to be a pro and do this, this, and that. It's kind of the nice thing, but also the frustrating thing about Highland Games is there's a lot of freedom, and like it's kind of a cool sport, but also like as far as legitimacy, not having like regulations and rules and stuff like that, sometimes it's hard to like, you know, do things super legit, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's a weird one.
Do you think that's what holds? And correct, because I'm not in the Highland Games and I don't follow it as thoroughly as you do. Do you think that's what's holding it back as a sport of like breaking into more mainstream, is the fact that it's not, there's no governing body, it's not heavily regulated? Do you think that hinders or helps the sport grow?
I think right now it does a little bit of both. I think kind of the freedom of it, and just like it's, the barrier to entry is very low. Like if you were at a festival and like saw the Highland Games going on and walked over before it started, and like the games had a novice class and you were like, I want to try this today, can I sign up? Like I would say 90% of the time you're going to get a yes. Like the barrier to entry is very low. But yeah, I definitely would say like as you move up into like people wanting to make things more legitimate, the lack of a governing body and official rules and regulations definitely hinders it a little bit. There's people like trying to make it happen and like creating this organization, trying to like make rules, but then, you know, I could start a new organization today and call it whatever, and try and make my own set of rules. So there's, you know, it definitely, there's a lack of, I would say it hinders us more than it helps us once you get out of like the novice ranks.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So it may not mean much to us or to most of our listeners, but could you give us some of your like all-time best performance numbers in terms of how far you've thrown?
Dude, or won your, a national title, so yeah.
Or your
like
Kaber, like your Kaber score and all that good stuff?
Yeah, Kaber score is a weird one. I mean,
that's why I brought it up.
I could say my best score ever is a 12 o'clock, but, you know, if that's with a stick that weighs 40 pounds and it's 10 feet long, it's not very impressive. Mm. Kaber does happen to be my worst event, so
okay.
It's really great to be bad at the signature event of the sport. But
it's you've got eight other events.
I'm working on it. But, yeah, I mean, PR-wise, I can just run through them real quick. My Braemar Stone PR, which is the heavy stone, it's 37.8. Open stone PR with a 16-pound stone is 46.2. With us for the lightweight class, with the heavyweight for distance and the weight over bar, which in the open class are typically 56 pounds, we throw a 42-pound weight because I guess everybody's scared of throwing the 56. That's the only difference weight-wise between lightweight weights for the implements and open. It's just the heavyweight and the lightweight are the heavyweight and the weight over bar are 14 pounds lighter. Mm-hmm. But with the 42, I think my PR is 43.4, 28-pound weight for distance, 68.1. The hammers are usually my best event, so our 22-pound hammer, my PR is 97.4. 16-pound hammer, PR is 120. Sheaf toss with a 16-pound bag is 30 feet, and the 42-pound weight over bar, 16 foot 6 inches.
When you do these events, do you get one shot at it, or do you get multiple? Like, is it like best of three?
Yeah, you get three attempts on each.
Okay,
And then when you same like all the events, let's just all the events besides height events, you get three attempts on each. So stones, weights, hammer, Kaber, and then for sheaf and weight over bar, basically there'll be a starting height. If it's just depending on skill level, they'll start at either like at a championship, they're going to start it at a pretty like, I guess you could say, challenging level, versus if you have new guys, they're going to start it pretty low so they can get some a clearance in. But you can, it's going to be a rising bar, starting height will vary, but you can choose where you want to come in. And then once you come in, for both sheaf and weight over bar, you get three attempts at each height.
So don't come in too high because you could miss.
Yeah, no, yeah, definitely no-hided before, and that's not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be like, no, I got this. And be like, yeah, shit. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. Sweet. So what has your training looked like over the course of your career? You obviously mentioned that you were like powerlifting, Highland Games hybrid, at least to start. And then you had, you obviously got a little bit more serious and got a lot more specific. So what does that look like practically from like exercises that you're doing, drills that you're doing on the field with the implements, your schedule? Obviously you don't have to give us a full rundown of your past 4 years or whatever, but I'm just kind of curious, obviously, because, you know, we're training nerds here and we like to talk shop, so I'm just curious on how that looks now and how it's evolved over the course of time.
Can I piggyback on that question real quick? Because I do want to know what the training looks like, but what was the one piece, aside from skill acquisition, what's the one thing that you added to your training that you're like, I never would have guessed, like this one, but this series of exercises are really critical to being, for all I know, it could just be jacked, just be big. Might be helpful to win the
bicep curls.
But the point being, what does training look like practically speaking, but also like, is there a particular style of training or something that you might have not used as much in the past that you find to be a really good addition to your training now that you compete?
Yeah. So training emphasis will change a lot during, not a lot, it changes throughout the year just depending on kind of where you are in the season. I'd say it really doesn't, as far as like overall themes, it really doesn't look a whole lot different from when I was training for powerlifting, just because like it's called the heavy athletics, like the lightest thing we throw is 16 pounds, so it helps to be strong. But like focus will shift a little bit just depending on where we're at in season. So I would say, so let's just start from like off-season. Off-season is going to look a lot more like powerlifting. Off-season, we're really just focused on building capacity at first, get a good volume-based set, and then transition over into just building max strength. And then as you approach the season, basically just taking that and slowly transitioning over to like speed and power development. And then that will shift even further just depending on like when my major games are, stuff like that. Like for example, Nationals in 2021 was in September. So really just had like this really slow, just gradual transition from max strength to strength speed, speed strength, and then just like purely just power output right leading up to Nationals. So definitely trying to be fast in season. Like right now, one thing I've really been enjoying, just because I finally got a tool to measure it, the coach I've been working with, I started working with him end of 2019, going right into the 2019 off season. We've been using a lot of like velocity based training, which has been really fun. He's thrown it in the past few seasons, and like I haven't had an actual tool to measure it. He suggested like some of the video apps you can use, but none of them ever really work great. Mm-hmm. So he finally threw it in this season, and I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna kind of splurge and buy a bar velocity tracker. So got one of those. We've been using it to kind of just auto regulate intensity. Once you're outside of a certain velocity range, right now, since we're trying to stay fast, you know, you're going too heavy. Want to keep things moving pretty quick right now in season. So doing a lot of that in the gym 3 times a week right now. Usually that will shift. We shift to 3 times a week in season as opposed to off season. In the gym 4 times a week, and that will kind of flip flop with throwing volume. So in season, throwing volume will go up as gym volume goes down. Throwing wise, usually in the off season, it follows the whole trend of just trying to be specific. Mm-hmm. So usually off season, I'm doing a lot of like drills, breaking down the throws into different components, practicing those, doing very few like full throws. And then as I move in, like that gradually shifts to less variations and more just full throws at higher intensity. like before a competition, when I'm like, if I'm peaking for a competition, I'm going out, I'm getting a few warm-up throws in, and then I'm doing like 3 to 5 competition style throws at near competition intensity, and then shutting it down. So that's kind of like follows like pretty basic principles of like max strength, transitioning to power, variations, moving towards, you know, very specific full competition throws throughout the season, and then once the season's over, rinse and repeat. And then as far as like things I added in, I would say the main thing, especially working with the coach I work with now, his name's Tom Soroka. He's based out of Chicago. He does a lot of, he owns a gym up there, does a lot of Olympic weightlifting coaching, competes in strongman and Moss wrestling. So I've been working with him for a while. So I would definitely say the main thing that has gotten added in since I've been working with him and doing Highland Games training is, you know, talking about stuff that I would not have done if I just kept training for powerlifting, is some of the Olympic lifts and variations thereof. And I would definitely say those are, there's plenty of great throwers that don't use it, use them. But I think for just kind of training that triple extension and that power development, has been very helpful.
I was going to say, as you were talking about, it sounded like power cleans and snatches would probably be as specific as you could get without actually throwing the actual implement or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
And then it sounds kind of like just almost like block periodization.
Yeah.
Right on. Sweet. Cool, man. Well, exceedingly fascinating stuff. You know, we're in a fun time, I think, in the fitness and lifting scene or market, in the sense that there are more options for people to compete than ever, you know, in strength. I think strength sports are really fun and unique and appealing to me because, again, I never excelled at team sports, never really excelled at like hand-eye coordination, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, again, these days when if you've got the energy and the enthusiasm and the coach and the environment to get into stuff like CrossFit, Olympic, powerlifting, strongman, Highland Games, obstacle course racing, all this kind of stuff. These are all inherently like individual performance-based sports where you don't need a team to practice with. But that allows people the opportunity to show their stuff on the field of play, in a competition environment, which, you know, we've talked about over the, you know, people that we've talked with here on the podcast over many episodes. I feel like that can be a big unlock for a lot of people, just giving you that motivation, that drive to actually train for something, which so often people kind of struggle with that motivation. And you know, for a lot of us, it's a luxury to be able to do these types of events and stuff like that. But yeah, if you have the opportunity to explore and dip your toes in the water with strength sports, for a lot of people, it ends up becoming the big missing puzzle piece that people need to get serious about their training, to make their training consistent, and to really just inject that motivation and to kind of wake up that maybe primal part of the brain that goes, oh, I need to like mind my P's and Q's. I need to actually like go out there and perform in front of people against other competitors, et cetera, et cetera. And again, if you're not a quote unquote professional athlete in traditional sports, you don't really have the opportunity to do that in the way that, you know, we can, like with strength sports.
Yeah.
You know, speaking to your point, if you've got a good attitude and some experience under your belt, you can put your name on the dotted line and go out there and hang out with, you know, folks like yourself and get exposed to the community and exposed to coaches and other competitors and, you know, maybe really, really find your niche.
Yeah. And a lot of the stuff you mentioned is like stuff I hear so frequently from people in Highland Games about like kind of why it drew them to the sport. Kind of like like, I'm same way, like, played football and soccer in high school, but, like, did, like, rode the bench on the football team. Played, like, wasn't, like, a star soccer player, but, like, I definitely played more there than football. But, yeah, like, finding something where you can kind of really, like, kind of dive into, and especially, like, if it's something you're able to be a little bit more, like, competitive at, kind of being able to, like, satisfy that itch of, like, training for something and being able to compete with it. And then, like, even something I think you touched on, but, like, the fun thing about Highland Games is just, like, one of the phrases I've heard somebody refer to it as, it's almost like a team sport played individually, just because it's, like, you are, like, competing by yourself against other people. Like, it's not a team sport, but the environment of the people there is, like, super supportive. Like, everybody's out there to have a good time. Everybody wants everyone to throw well. If you're a douchebag, like, you, that usually don't last very long, just because people will say, you know, thanks, but I you know, I don't want you to come throw at my games. But yeah, and it's also, like, another cool thing, like, you know, especially if you haven't had that, like, that sensation of, like, having people, like, cheer for you at, like, at that level in high school and stuff. It's always like super fun. Like, I've got one coming up that's, like, first weekend in August. It's the Dublin Irish Festival. It's in Dublin, Ohio. It's, like, kind of over there up around Columbus. Like, thousands of people come through the gate each year, and so that's, like, usually the one that has, like, the biggest crowd each year, and, like, they're all there just, like, going nuts for you, and you can kind of, like, play to the crowd and stuff. So it's fun to get that opportunity, just to, like, one, compete and go out and, like, just have a good time. It's almost like another phrase I heard somebody use is almost just, like, kind of this little cheat code we found in the strength sport world. So yeah, it's all the things you said are stuff that kind of ring a bell to me.
Yeah. There's no feeling like being in the spotlight, so to speak, and just having people cheer for you. You know, it's ideally what we get from our favorite song. That's why we listen to music that amps us up, and why it gives us that push in training. It's like, oh, this is something that is amping me up. And yeah, the supportive cheer of strangers or loved ones and friends is a very, very powerful example of that. Have we thoroughly dissected and explored Highland Games?
I think the only thing I wanted to ask is if, obviously we're asking you questions about Highland Games, if someone's like, sell me on it. Like, I don't know anything about Highland Games. Sell me on it. What's the one thing that you would want either someone asking that question or the audience that's listening, what's one thing that you want them to take away from either the Highland Games or the training experience or what we were just talking about, if you had to give them one thing?
To sell them on it?
Not necessarily sell them on it, but if you wanted them to have one takeaway about what the Highland Games is, what it stands for, your experience as an athlete, your experience in that community, what's one thing that people just could not get if you, like, without having ever experienced it or ever seen it? Like, I could talk about lacrosse. You guys did you play lacrosse? You didn't play lacrosse? So it'd be kind of like that. Like, if I was trying to tell somebody about that experience, you guys have never been there. You've probably seen a game, maybe, but you don't know anything about it. What's one thing you want people to take away from the Highland Games, the events, the camaraderie, if you could find one thing?
One thing. Man. I don't know if I can find one thing, but I can try and, like, package it in a small, maybe, group of statements. I think it's, like I said, it's kind of that, like, cheat code we found where you get to go out and be competitive outside of, like, organized sports, competing in movements that require skill and strength, with people that, like, just with good people, that want you to do well. Yes, there are people that are there to, like, really compete, and they want to win, but the community's incredible. So yeah, it's hard to, like, put it in just one thing, but I think just it's, unless you have tried it or are familiar with like throwing, it's hard to really appreciate the skill that goes into like watching a world record holder or a pro like throw those events. But yeah, I don't know if that accomplished what you wanted to hear, but
if I may be so bold, coming from someone who's never done it, it's badass.
Well, no, I agree.
Right?
We all agree.
It looks cool. Super cool. I'm sure it feels like, I'm sure you feel super badass when you know you've got just the right throw, just the right spin. You let it go at just the right time, and you just see this hunk of iron soar like a golf ball across the field. And you've thrown, at least in one of those PRs you were mentioning, over 100 yards.
Feet.
Meters, feet, yards. Feet.
Freedom units.
Mm-hmm. So throwing something that is just a hunk of metal. I mean, honestly, the few occasions that I've like trained people like out on like a big field, like with kettlebells, I think, you know, obviously you're aware of your surroundings. There's nothing wrong with swinging a kettlebell a few times and then saying, give it a big heave-ho, and then just let it go. And the sounds that emanate from people's mouths is just so fun. Like, people just, they just eat it up. There's something very primally satisfying about throwing something.
Mm. Yep.
And, you know, there are some theories of human development or evolution that say that a big unlock for us getting to where we are in Homo sapien development stems from our ability to throw a spear or otherwise take advantage of our hand-eye coordination to dominate our environment.
Yeah.
That's a conversation that's above my pay grade.
And tell stories,
but
what you're good at.
Yeah, gather around the campfire and tell tall tales.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something super cool about that. Now, obviously, the big drawback there, as we alluded to before, you can do powerlifting in just about any average gym, but you can't really throw stuff around. So do you have like a park or a field or a big backyard that you toss in?
Yeah, so I live down in Cool Springs, and there's a little field kind of across the street from our condo, and that's where I've kind of found my throwing home. I train at a gym. Gym-wise training, my home gym is Southside Strength down in Brentwood. And occasionally, like when I was training for the Arnold, I knew we were going to be throwing indoors. So I threw off the concrete behind the gym into the grass. But typically, you're going to be throwing off grass. So trying to find just a big grass field me and my wife have moved around a lot in the past several years, just with school and finishing that up and jobs and whatnot. And so each time I've moved to a new place, it's always the game of trying to find where I can go, where can I go throw where I have space for it and I won't get kicked out or in trouble for putting holes in the ground.
Oh, so putting the big old divots in the ground.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, maybe at some point later on this year when it gets a little cool, maybe we could go out to Shelby.
To the airport?
Or maybe to like the...
Yeah, Shelby, probably.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the airpark or the...
Shelby, the Nature Center, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that big field down there. Do you have all your own implements?
Got them all.
Yeah, heck yeah.
What do you drive to get that caber around?
don't currently own a caber. But
he brings a power saw out and just takes down a telephone pole.
You know why I'm terrible at it.
You know what? I actually have a felled telephone pole in my backyard right now. I'm not doing anything with it. It's just sitting off to the side. We'll talk off air.
Okay.
It's yours if you want to haul it off. It weighs a ton. That's why I don't move it. It just sits there.
Yeah.
I just thought about that.
Imagine that.
Look at that. All right.
We'll also come by and just toss it down the street.
That's fine. I'm fine with that. Okay, we'll talk off air.
Okay.
Yeah, that's funny. Cool. Obvious kind of selfish question here. Andy probably knows I was going to bring this up sooner or later, but do you swing kettlebells as part of your training?
Every now and then I'll have kettlebell swings, and usually in a warm-up.
Okay.
But not a a core part of my training routine.
Sure. Sorry, bro.
Sure. Sorry, man.
No, quite all right. Quite all right. What do I know? Yeah.
Well, you haven't competed in the Highland Games yet. You could be that guy that brings kettlebells to the training sphere of Highland Games.
Sure. Sure. Well, I think, you know, maybe, I mean, you know, speaking of like Highland Games and Olympic lifting, you're probably familiar with Dan John. We might have to talk off air about that.
There's a whole bunch of books. You're welcome to take some of his books with you if you want.
But yeah, I think if anybody has broken that ice, it's probably Dan John.
Because he's competed, right?
Yeah, Dan John is a...
He's a master's competitor. He's an older
guy. Yeah, I don't know his numbers or performance or anything, but he's made a name for himself as a track and field coach and as a competitor in Olympic lifting and Highland Games.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I may recognize him.
As a master's athlete.
The name doesn't ring a bell right off the top of my head.
Yeah. As a master's athlete, because he's 60-something now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. 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 Well, very cool. Well, awesome stuff. I know I'm super inspired to give it a shot. Obviously, the tricky thing is, you know, getting your hands on the right implements. And for those of you who are paying very close attention, Willis mentioned Garrett Blatnick,
yep.
Who has a brother, Justin. And Justin Blatnick actually taught me Olympic lifting back in the day when I was living down in Charlotte. And you want to talk about a super knowledgeable, super strong guy. Justin definitely fits the bill. And I've never met his brother, but I only hear that it runs in the family.
Yeah.
So
through with both of them a few weeks ago out at a local games in Lebanon. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
they both did very well. So yeah, they're kind of freaks.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding. All that to say, I very briefly had kind of picked his brain again those years ago about Highland Games, but never got around to going out on the field and throwing anything around. So in any case, that might be something that maybe we could play around with later on this year when it's not oppressively disgustingly hot outside.
That's the one thing about Highland Games is unless you're fortunate enough to have a indoor facility where you can throw things, there's not a lot of getting around the heat in the summertime.
Yeah.
At least not in Tennessee.
Yeah, that's gnarly. Well, cool. Well, obviously, we want to respect your time, and we don't want to keep you here all afternoon. But we also obviously wanted to inquire about your experience and your perspective as a physical therapist.
Yeah.
I believe our very first podcast guest was Aaron,
yeah.
Your PT,
mm-hmm.
who's helped you out through some shoulder issues.
And bicep. Right?
And bicep issues.
And other shoulder.
Yeah.
And low back, but yeah.
Yeah. So, Andy, I mean, you yourself have had the most experience with PTs and PT school, which I don't know if he told you about. How should we maybe kind of... in a nutshell, kind of broach the subject of physical therapy and highlight Willis the best?
Well, we talked about this off air before we started recording. So I've had this, I blew out the shoulder a few years ago. I had rotator cuff surgery and labrum. I already had a torn labrum from playing lacrosse that I didn't know about. Blew out my rotator cuff playing kickball, of all things. trying to save a home run, which I did twice. But
that's what counts.
Shredded my rotator cuff in the process. So blew out my arm, went through a ton of physical therapy and got okay to an okay place. But eventually, like, it just was terrible. And so I ended up getting surgery. I went through Elite Orthopedic. Dr. Moore reconstructed my shoulder, did great. And I love my shoulder. Then a couple years later, I tore this bicep. locked me out of deadlift. And Dr. Moore again fixed my bicep. Aaron patched up my shoulder, helped me patch up the bicep. This shoulder's also going bad. Dr. Moore, when I did the first shoulder, just ranged it. And he was like, one of these days, you're going to have to get that done. And here we are a couple years later. We've got a kid on the way, so it's not in the cards right now. But maybe in the next couple years, I'll probably have to get this shoulder done because it's just very unstable. Okay. And so it's hard to move around. All that is to say, I've had a lot of experience with surgery and it had really great outcomes. And physical therapy, and had really great outcomes. It's just one of those things, wear and tear, playing sports, all that. You mentioned off air that you had a very fitness forward approach to physical therapy, and I'll let you explain what that means, but it's been my experience, unless I work with a physical therapist who also trains and trains hard, likes to lift, understands the needs of the athlete, you sometimes get this sort of what feels like, and these are my words, what feels like this sort of, I'm going to choose my words carefully, sort of this run-of-the-mill, generic approach to rehab, which is fine. I'm sure there's a ton of literature to support it. They have way more experience, and I'm not a physical therapist. He mentioned I was on my way, got into physical therapy school and declined.
Okay.
And got my master's degree in ex-phys instead. So I had an interest in it.
Which you can see on the wall.
I finally put it on the wall. Anyway. So I have an interest and a respect for physical therapy, but I'm obviously not a physical therapist and I don't play pretend to be one. But I do have a tremendous amount of respect for physical therapists who also either compete or are physically active because I feel they understand my needs better than maybe a physical therapist who doesn't lift or isn't as interested in, you know, the kind of person that's like, well, don't do those things that hurt. And it's like, well, I like doing that. I like overhead pressing. So I'm going to do something overhead because I like doing it. I need help navigating what that looks like in a pre and post operative or pre and post physical therapy intervention. What does it look like for you as a practitioner in physical therapy when you say that you approach PT in a fitness forward, and that's what you, those are the words you use,
yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. In a fitness forward, what does that look like if you've got an athlete or a patient that comes to see you about, you know, let's say a shoulder or an elbow or a knee or whatever it is, what does that look like between like when you first meet them and then kind of progressing them through their rehab?
Yeah, so, and I think a lot of it, like, this approach can be, like, there's a lot of clinicians that don't work with, like, a super active population like we do. The group I'm with is Evo Performance Therapy. We practice out of several different CrossFit gyms right now, so that's kind of naturally the population we work with. But again, there's plenty of good, great, awesome therapists that use this approach with kind of your more like day-to-day patients or that may be a little bit more sedentary or aren't like training to compete at a competitive level. But for us, kind of like you touched on the whole thing about one thing we kind of really take pride in is walking the walk. All of us train some sort of capacity, we train for something and have been doing it for a while, so kind of like you said, we kind of understand the needs of the athlete and how, you know, how important training is to those people. So what that looks like is getting a really good like history that is specific to this person. A complaint a lot of people will have about, I guess you could say, your more corporate physical therapy places is, you know, they hear the whole thing about, I get the same exercises as, you know, this person who is way different than me, different age, different activity level, stuff like that. So we really take pride in kind of creating a plan of care that is specific to this person. Yes, there's always going to be some overlap of like, some people are going to have the same shoulder exercises, but really addressing the deficits that are creating the problem and really working on those going forward so the problem doesn't happen again, so it doesn't hinder you from training in the future. And really what that looks like through a plan of care is, yeah, it might mean at the beginning, say you're having an issue like a really aggressive rotator cuff. That might mean laying off overhead pressing or snatching if one of those is a really problematic movement and really tends to piss off your shoulder. Might need to give it a break for a couple weeks, but that's where we really have a good ability to, okay, what modifications can we make? What other exercises can you do to achieve a similar stimulus without just saying like, well, just lay up, don't go to the gym for a couple weeks. That is rarely ever the answer. So stuff like that, being able to give good modifications so you can keep training at a level that you want to while maybe having to adjust a few things, and then having a plan of care that gets you back to doing those things as soon as possible at the level you want to do them at, whether that looks like, usually it will include a blend of like mobility programming, and even if it, we all have like strength conditioning like backgrounds and knowledge, so if we get to an end of a plan of care and there's still like some progressions you want to make, that's where we're able to, okay, let's talk about how can we add these things into your programming. Are there certain things you need to be adding in? At what level do you need to be doing them? How frequently do you need to be doing them? Stuff like that.
I love it. I mean, again, I've been to the more corporate style where it feels like it, yeah, like you said, everybody kind of gets the same this or that, internal, external rotation, blah, 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 perturbations, whatever. And sometimes, you know, I guess sometimes it works, and maybe with a low activity level population, it might be just what they need, because truthfully, more activity than they're probably already doing. But when you get into sort of the, I'm going to use the term high level, but I'm going to air quotes it because I don't think that I'm a high level athlete. But when you get to you like working with high level athletes who probably don't quit, don't want to quit, they're not going to quit, instead of saying, oh, well, just stop, that doesn't work, that doesn't compute for those people, doesn't compute for me. And so I like talking with physical therapists that understand, A, that this athlete has needs that we need to address, and B, they're not going to stop training. So what can we do that keeps them moving, keeps them training, but works to intervene with whatever's causing the issue, work around it, come up with modifications, so on and so forth. I always now will refer out to people like you, because not that all of my clients that I work with are high-performing athletes, but I don't like the idea. I think the three of us would agree that we would never want someone to come in and be like, oh, well, you can't do, you're not allowed to do X, Y, and Z. I don't think you would ever use that language. You would probably never use that language. You'd be like, okay, well, maybe this hurts or this doesn't look good, but we've got these other alternatives. Let's see how we can rock those, and then maybe over time see if we can explore these other movements that have been problematic.
Right.
I think there's been in the past this disconnect between physical therapy and, let's say, personal training, strength and conditioning. There's been a little bit of a gap. I think it's starting to close without the respective practitioners, I would hope, I'm going to say this in hopeful terms, without respectful practitioners crossing boundaries.
Right.
You're great because you do both. You coach, like coach athletes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You coach and you do physical therapy, so you have probably a better lens in order to do both. I take a tremendous amount of pride in not being a physical therapist. And so if I run into a snag, I'm like, call my buddy Willis. He's going to help you out. He knows what we're trying to do. He knows what we can or can't do, and he can see and do things that I can't do. And I'm okay with that. I love that. I love my lane. But I think our lanes are getting closer, and I'm hopeful for strength and conditioning and physical therapy in the future.
Yeah.
And I'm glad the A to Z No BS show can play a part in that process.
Okay.
Bringing our lanes closer together.
Okay.
Not to jump down one last rabbit hole before we wrap up, but I can't let this go unrecognized. You're a heavy metal fan.
Yes.
So do what? Tell, who are some of your favorite bands, some of your favorite tracks, some of your favorite maybe training albums?
Man, wow, there's so many.
I know.
I guess if I had to pick a favorite band, it would be the band that got me into metal in high school. It's a band called Miss May I. Really good.
Nice.
metalcore band. I went and got to see them a couple months ago. First time I'd seen them in several years, so that was really awesome. Gosh, I've like gone through so many like phases throughout the years, like gone through a little bit more of like a punk phase. I kind of listened to hardcore for a while, but I really listened to just anything heavy. Like right now I'm really digging a band called called Fit for an Autopsy. They have an album that they put out, I think it was earlier this year, that's pretty gnarly. Classic metal band, Meshuggah. It's really good. Really like some Meshuggah, some of their older stuff. Went through a really big Lamb of God phase a couple years ago. But yeah, man, just loud and heavy. Loud and heavy.
Yeah, man. Love it. Love it. Yes. I'm probably not as big of a metalhead as you are. But we were talking about Old Parkway Drive, Old In Flames.
Wasn't as much into them.
Okay.
August Burns Red much?
August, hell yeah. Hell yeah, August Burns Red.
Now I feel really like softcore in my metal because I listen to like Slipknot and Static X and like Dope or whatever.
Slipknot's like a classic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for patronizing me.
No.
I mean, totally honest, I never listened to like a ton of Slipknot. Like, I listened to some of their like classic tracks, and I mean, they're obviously a staple in the metal scene, but yeah.
I mean, we're talking about, I was like 14, so how old am I? It was 20 years ago. So 2002, like when Finding Music was on Kazaa or LimeWire. So,
oh boy,
it was hard, a little harder to find that music when you were 14 trying to illegally download it or whatever. Yeah. And then by the time I was in my later teenage years, I sort of grew out of it, but
yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm from Virginia. So Lamb of God is one of my favorite bands from Richmond. Definitely still just a huge fan of a lot of their old stuff.
Yep.
August Burns Red. How about Darkest Hour?
Not familiar with them.
Okay.
What does your wife think of your music taste?
She does not like it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's what I've listened to ever since she's known me, so she...
So she's used to
it. She knows, but that is not her
she's
style.
She's not going to the concerts with you? Okay.
No. She went to... She says she's been to one, like, she calls it, like, screaming show. We went and saw Incubus in 2014, and Deftones was playing.
Oh, nice.
That'd be a great show.
She said it was an awesome show. Drove down to Atlanta for it. I like both of those, but I was really going to see Incubus. They headlined it. And then, obviously, Deftones has some screaming, so she said that she's been to one before. I'm like,
that was it?
Yes, but no. It was in, like, a big amphitheater, so, not really. It
doesn't really hit the same.
Nah.
Y'all are going to laugh at me. You know the next concert I'm going to next Wednesday? Nora Jones.
Aw. Nora Jones is great.
Nice.
She's fabulous. It's going to be hot. It's at a sin, but I'm just laughing because I'm not as hardcore as you guys, but my wife would not... She does not like any of that music either. She actually anytime I would listen to Rob Zombie, she'd make fun of it. So like, she just gives me shit for that kind of music. So next week I'm going to Nora Jones. She's fabulous, but it's just an interesting hard left.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you mosh? You get in the pit?
I do.
I wouldn't mosh with this guy.
Dude, this guy looks like he moshes. He could handle his own.
He throws heavy stuff.
Yeah, dude.
I'm not about to get like too close.
Yeah, dude, I get bumped too hard, and I'm like, okay, I've had enough. Yeah.
I'll have to show you a video when we get done.
Oh, boy.
But I just, like, on that topic, me and my buddy Travis, head coach over at CrossFit Music City, he's my metal concert buddy. We went to a show in March, and may or may not have left with a broken toe. So that was fun.
Yeah, fun. How was the other guy?
Well, the other guy was... the other guy was a metal post.
You should mosh against human flesh.
Yeah, there may have been some crowd surfing involved, but the little gap in between the stage and basically the backside of the barricade, and they have those little like anchor pieces that basically keep it from tipping towards the stage.
Yeah.
Well, I crowd surfed towards the front. Security let me down and was just walking back through and just stubbed my toe really hard on all those metal pieces. So, not a super cool story.
Well, it could have turned out worse.
Yeah, but it did not feel great. All black and blue the next morning.
Damn,
that's how it goes. I broke a toe getting out of my bathtub a couple weeks ago. It still hurts.
Yeah.
Anytime I have to, like, pivot on my foot, I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Well, all that to say, if you're looking to add one to your metal crew, I'm definitely interested.
Okay.
I'll come along. I'm not going to mosh, but I'll be there.
But there's some good concerts coming up in August and September.
Yeah.
Speaking of September, Middle Tennessee Highland Games, I'll be throwing out there if you want to come hang out.
And I was going to ask when your next competition was.
Oh. Yeah. So the next one will be the one in Dublin, Ohio. Mm-hmm. First week, that's going to be a nutty week. We're going to the CrossFit Games with some of the athletes that week, and then I'm going to be driving from Madison to Dublin on Friday and then back here on Sunday. So that's going to be crazy. But yeah, it'll be August 6th is the next one in Dublin, and then I believe, I can't remember what date it is, but the Middle Tennessee Games out in Hendersonville, I think, is in September.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I'll go out to the Middle Tennessee Games in September.
Let's do it.
I'll be about a month out from having a baby. I know. Yeah, be my last out, like big outing for a little while. Yeah. But
last chance to dance.
Yeah, let's do it.
Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
Dig it. Well, Willis, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was obviously a super fun conversation. Anytime we get to nerd out, I've said this half a dozen times at this point, but it's always fun to nerd out with other coaches and lifters who are just as serious and into training and performance as we are, but obviously have a completely different and unique experience and set of perspectives.
Yeah.
So want to say thank you so much for coming on, sharing your story, your knowledge, your thoughts, and we really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
How can our audience find you?
So I have Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. I'm more active on Instagram. I think it's just Graves_Willis. And then the PT group I work with, we also do a lot on Instagram. If you're ever looking to get some PT done or got anything that's been nagging you for a while, you want to get checked out, we're Evo Performance Therapy. I believe it's Evo.PT on Instagram. We try and put out some content pretty frequently on there. So either one of those places.
Sweet.
Perfect. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. Hope you are having a hot, fun summer. This is the A to Z No BS Show. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.